Hey friends, we wanted to take a quick minute and personally invite you to two really special gatherings coming this fall. First, our intentional motherhood retreat in Portland, Oregon, October 15th through the 17th, and then our intentional fatherhood retreat in Austin, Texas, November 12th through the 14th. Honestly, these retreats have become so much more than events for us. They've become spaces where people encounter God, experience healing, honesty, friendship, freedom, and real transformation. We live in a world that is full of information. We have podcasts, books, content, advice, but transformation requires more than information. Sometimes you need space, you need community, you need honesty, you need the presence of God, and you need to get around other people who are fighting for the same things you are. At these events, we've watched marriages soften again. We've watched fathers come out of hiding. We've watched mothers breathe deeply again. We've watched people feel seen, known, challenged, and deeply encouraged. And we would genuinely love for you to join us. You can learn more and grab tickets at intentionalparents.org. And for all things fatherhood, you can visit intentionalfatherhood.org. We hope to see you there.
Welcome to the Intentional Parents Podcast. Intentional exists to help parents in their God-given task to raise passionate Jesus followers. We exist to bring hope, help, and healing to families. Each week, we will talk about anything from parenting, marriage, lifestyle, and what it looks like to follow Jesus in our time. Intentional is made up of Phil and Diane Comer and Brooke and Elizabeth Moser. I am Brooke, and the funny thing is, we are all family. Elizabeth is Phil and Diane's daughter, so we're a family figuring this thing out together. We hope this podcast feels like you're sitting with us in our home talking about how to do this thing called life together. Elizabeth and I are your hosts. Let's get into this week's podcast. If you're enjoying this content and you want to go deeper, we have an amazing resource that we want to tell you about. It's the Intentional Film Series, Raising Passionate Jesus Followers. Now, this is an incredible tool for you for spiritual formation in the family. And we created this film series to help parents in their God-given task to raise and disciple their own children. Now, our hope is that we're able to help you and give you some of the tools that I know we so desperately need as we're in the process of raising our kids, and Phil and Diane have actually raised their kids. This is a 9-session film series on the process of what raising a passionate Jesus follower actually looks like. There's some workable solutions in here. There's a bunch of wisdom from the scriptures, and there's a bunch of practical help in your journey as you are raising your children. We cover all sorts of things like parental roles, goals versus values. What is discipline versus punishment? How do I create a heart of obedience in my child where they actually want to obey? What does a heart of self-control look like? Or how do I even help my child in the process of character development? We cover that and so many more things. You can use this film series in a variety of ways. You can use it at your home, preferably with your spouse if that's applicable, with a group of friends or in your community, or even through your local church. All you need to do is head over to our website, intentionalparents.org, click on film series, and then follow the prompts. We have a bunch of other resources there that you can check out, but we do pray that this blesses you in your pursuit of raising passionate Jesus followers. All right, welcome back to the Intentional Parents Podcast. We all just started and we're all laughing because I asked Elizabeth to start this episode and she basically, what did you say? Just please try to mimic what you just said.
I hate starting the episodes.
I was literally like,
it's so awkward. It feels so awkward.
Oh, thanks. So every single
time. You do a great job.
Oh, I wasn't asking for that. But today, Phil's here and Elizabeth, and we are missing the mighty Diane. She is not feeling well today. But we did just get back from Lake Tahoe, and we just had our second annual intentional leadership retreat. We had over 100 pastors and there are some staff and leaders and their wives and families there. Not all families, obviously, but it was great, wasn't it? We had just a delightful time.
Yeah, it was a rich time, and pouring the love and the scriptures into these leaders who don't get enough time to get away when they're not leading.
Yes,
to just receive and be refreshed and prayed over and taught and hugged and loved and
affirmed,
which was huge. Yeah, and for them to be able to make friends with each other too, because they're all mm-hmm. in different churches, you know, mostly yes. on the West Coast. But I love yeah. that one couple that we all got to meet from Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
They were a great joy.
Oh, so, if you guys are listening, yeah. You know, what's so funny is, well, it was also really great because you and Diane, who've been in ministry for 43 years? It's something.
Longer.
No, well,
longer.
45, 46. Just give me the number.
Me, it's 47. She's been with me 44 of those.
47.
Starting this July 15th, 44 of the 47 we've been together.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it was really, what I'm saying is, it was really great to have you guys share 47 plus years, you know, of ministry experience and leadership experience that you guys have had, which, you know, at that span of life, that's older than the average listener's age on this podcast. Mm-hmm. So you've been in ministry longer than, you know, most people that have been alive that are listening. Yeah. And so all that said, I think that is interesting. It was interesting. It was encouraging. It was helpful. And what I loved that you guys did was just went back to timeless truth over and over mm-hmm. and over and over again. And the Bible, you know, in it whole, it just speaks to every part of life, you know, yeah. and obviously it doesn't always nuance, every detail, but man, it speaks to everything. It speaks to so many things. And mm-hmm. I was just reminded of that and had a lot of great prayer points and got to meet a lot of fun people. So,
yeah, you know, well, when you get older, you've seen things and you can get older and not be wise, but when you do get older, you've seen, as far as following Jesus, you've seen people stay strong,
yes,
and they're still serving the Lord, and you've seen people that once were strong and aren't anymore. And so it was just great to talk about the things that we want to have. You know, the new phrase I'm hearing you guys talk about is a rule of life, how you live your life so that you stay faithful till the end, faithful as a father, faithful as a husband, faithful as a wife, and modeling that for the next generation coming up and the fruit that comes from that and the joy that comes from that.
Yes.
So it was just great to be able to talk about people that mentored us and modeled that for us. And now, of course, Diane and I, that's our goal and our joy that we would be able to pass on. Plus, you're able to pass on your mistakes.
Yes. Like,
let us tell you how I blew it here and how I blew it there and what I should have done and what the scriptures say.
Yep.
And, you know, I like to say we learn more from our mistakes than our successes. Yep. So that was a privilege.
I love that you kept saying it was almost like a joke by the end because you have led through so many transitions and moments where on the leadership teams that you were on, you didn't have moral failure, but the people around you did. And God used you to hold these massive churches, even in the 70s and 80s together. And the phrase that you kept saying, which I already knew all this stuff, obviously, but it was a great reminder. It was like, and then he failed morally. And then we stepped in and this is how we handled that. And this is what happened. And then another story. And then he failed morally. And we're like, oh my goodness. Not only was that sad, but then it was also like this phrase and God giving you this ability to lead through, you know, conflict and to lead through when the church is breaking apart. And God used you and Diane in a huge way to be that glue and to pass on so many of those life lessons to so many people. So I know it was invaluable. And I also laughed a lot because there was a handful of times that you kept on thinking that when you were teaching that Diane was crying, like, because she was so moved by what you said.
It was just her contacts. It was her contacts. I said, "Are you crying?" No. I thought I knew my wife really well.
Yeah, you were like teaching and you were thinking that your words were moving her so much that she's just sitting there crying like she's never heard it before. And
no,
she's like,
she was not.
And she just
moved.
Kept looking. She's like, "No, I'm not crying. I mean, this is good, but I'm not that moved." Anyway, we had a great time. And if you're a pastor or if you're at all aware of some of the stuff we do with the leadership stuff, you obviously know the intentional leadership retreat is something we try to do each year. And we'll put more out on that, later down the road. Later this year, but it was a great time. We had a wonderful time. Lake Tahoe, beautiful place. Also, just really quick before we get into today, thank you for everybody that's been rating the podcast again and subscribing. I know we say this each week, but it really matters and it really has been blessing us. So I can't say enough about it. It's just been a gift. So thank you. If you haven't had a chance to rate the podcast or even just leave a comment, could you just pause right now, take 10 seconds to help us? We're trying to get to 1,000 ratings by the end of July. We'll see if we get there, but we would love to partner with you in that specific way. Thank you so much for your help with that. Last week, we actually released a teaching that I had done on gender roles in marriage and asking, you know, that question. A question came up in this church that I was teaching at, and what are the gender roles in marriage? If biblically and how do we approach them and what are men's roles and what are women's roles. And so, as I kind of said last week, our goal was to release that, give some foundation, and then talk about the various roles. Like, okay, so how does that impact Elizabeth, you and Diane? And then how does it as wives? And then how does it impact Phil and I as husbands? And so, since Diane was sick today, we said, okay, so Phil and I are going to do this. And we obviously always want you, sweetheart Elizabeth, to be able to speak to this and ask any questions, because your perspective of even how we are operating as husbands, or I as a husband, mm-hmm. is always so insightful. And so I'm glad you're here to be a voice mm-hmm. to and ask the questions that so many of our sisters will be thinking, yeah. but we'll yeah. probably miss in some ways. And so
I'll keep you guys in line.
Yeah,
there you go.
But you won't intro the podcast. You won't intro it, but you will keep us.
Why
in
would
line.
I do it if you're so good at it? And you're sitting it. Right there. You're, with the
this is. I know what you're doing. This is not fair, because you're trying to butter me up and make it feel good. So then I'm like, well, I guess I have to do it because she said I'm so
it
good.
It worked.
No. So anyway, well. Today, as a launching pad, we'd love to just launch from 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7. Phil, you have it right there, because I have it here, but I would love to hear your translation, because you're NASB, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh, would you start us off with that? And I think it's a great launching point to the conversation of what mm-hmm. is a man's role in marriage. And again, we talked mm-hmm. a little bit about it, but we're going to go
yeah.
deep dive today.
Yeah, this is 1 Peter 3, of course, the first six verses are all about the wife's role and yeah. Sarah as being the example. But then verse 7, you husbands likewise live with your wives in an understanding way, as with a weaker vessel, and we're going to explain what that means, since she is a woman, and grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. And then it goes on to talk about together, to sum up, let all be harmonious, sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, humble in spirit, etc. So verse 7 is directed by God towards husbands.
Yes.
It's exactly how they are to treat their wives and to grant them honor, and why they're to grant them honor. And if we don't, our prayers are going to bounce off the roof, is the way I like to say it.
Yeah.
Where you're saying, Lord, I'm really asking you for this. And
yes.
it hits the roof and God says, that's great, but before I answer that prayer, go back and ask your wife's forgiveness, because yes. you're not yes. treating her with honor. And so yeah. it's convicting, you know, yes. to every man who reads that. But I love that it's there, because it's like a discipline. It's a warning from God. And
yeah.
God's warnings initially are super tender. And
yeah.
it's only when we yep. don't obey that he has to get stronger, just like a good father does with his kids. But he's saying, you know, this is the... Your wife is that important to me. She's my daughter. I died yes. for her, and this is the way I treat her, and I expect you to treat her yes. the same way.
I think it's important to start off to say, Phil and I have room for improvement in the arena of husbandry.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
I want you to read that other at some point, that other translation from the Passion Translation, because
yes.
I always thought, well, I'm pretty, I live with my wife in an understanding way. I'm an understanding guy.
Oh yeah.
And not perfectly, but then you and I both have become convicted from this translation, which is more like an amplified translation of
Don't base your theology off of it.
That could be used, the idea behind that phrase in an understanding way.
Yeah, and that's actually, so I want to say it's really important that we mention we have tons of room for improvement mm-hmm. in this arena. And Phil, I really do appreciate, even at your age and stage, you and Diane are still honest about the fact, like, we're still in process. We still haven't figured it all out.
Even after almost 44 years.
Yeah, yes. and yeah. still needing to work things out. And honestly, for me, that doesn't make me respect you less, and it doesn't make me go, oh man, why didn't you guys figure this out yet? Mm-hmm. You've had a lot of time. It yeah. actually gives me hope, because I'm like, oh, I'm broken too. This takes a long time to figure out. And so that's been really helpful for me specifically. But let me just share really fast that it's 7. It says, husbands, in turn, you must treat your wives with tenderness, viewing them as feminine partners who deserve to be honored, for they are co-heirs with you of divine grace of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. And so the first observation I would just say for me personally is that verse causes me to just pause and take seriously, like, wow, how many men are godly to a fault, meaning they're so they're all about, I'm going to be really, I know some men obviously who are Like, so I read the scriptures, I'm devout in these ways, but I treat nobody with love or tenderness or care around me. Mm-hmm. And it's, and what I love about what this word in Peter says is that, you know, you can have all the things in place, but it starts with you recognizing if you are not treating your spouse, the person closest to you, with tenderness, with grace, it will hinder your prayers. And I don't know about you, Phil, but that was actually something that's really motivating for me. Mm-hmm. I think God knows how to motivate men and say, hey, you have to deal with the most important thing first. And so I know for me, it's just very sobering. That verse is very sobering to me.
Well, you really value prayer and you do prayer walks. And so you want those prayers to count. So yeah, that's convicting. No,
using all this time, God, please answer.
Just read the NIV, right?
That was the Passion. But what you're I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about.
Okay,
the convicting part. It's in the notes in the Passion.
It's right here. So the notes there is, husbands, you in turn must treat your wives with tenderness. And then another way that is said is with intimate insight. Another way is realistically or with considerateness. And the idea is that with consideration of what they desire and delight in and not ignorant of their preferences.
Yeah, that's those last three phrases. Yeah, that's what was really convicting to me.
So it says intimate insight, realistically, with considerateness. That is with consideration of what they desire, what they delight in, not ignorant of their preferences.
Yes. Mm. Yes. And see, not ignorant of their preferences. You know, the Bible talks about preferring one another in honor. And so there's that willing to yield to the other one's point of view, actually caring about what they prefer and what they consider important instead of, you know, hey, you need to come my way because I'm the leader. You know, it's actually coming their way. So like that was really convicting to me because, you know, I think of myself as living with Diana in an understanding way. But then, wow, how often do I consider her preferences? And it gets really practical because we move through life completely differently.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, like she loves to kayak. And I tried it with her once. We got in an argument because I was just bored because she, you know, I want to go to the other side of the lake. Let's move, you know.
Let's conquer the
and
lake.
She was just puttering and bringing out her camera to take a picture of a flower on the side of the lake or whatever. She was having the time of her life, but I was spoiling it because I wasn't coming her way.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kayak. Okay, we're going to kayak my way. Or am I going to come your way and enjoy being with my wife? And in my case, you know, chilling out a little bit and coming her way just to be together, and which says to her that that speaks love to her.
But even before we started talking today, you were doing this. You were saying how you're planning this Saturday. You're going to do something with the kids. And you asked, you're like, I'm trying to slow down and trying to do some of these things that Diane really enjoys. Yeah. And it's not that you don't enjoy them, but maybe they're not your first preference, but they're her first preference. I'd be curious, sweetheart, how does this impact you? Or maybe a better question would be like, obviously living with consideration of your preferences is really important. And I know that in our situation, your preferences have changed over time. And I think I use a silly analogy in the teaching. At least someone made a comment about the fact that your love language was not fully, I don't know if it was ever fully physical touch, but it's more physical touch than when we had kids, and it went from like physical touch to acts of service. And I was like, this feels so violent. Like we went from cuddling to emptying the dishwasher as being the way I romance you. And I'm like, I hate this, right? Like, so honoring your preferences, I would say, first of all, husbands, it can change, but I don't think I do a great job at this. But I, what's your perspective on this? I don't really have a good question.
I'm laughing because your mom, Elizabeth, Diane says the love language of every young mom with little kids is help. Yes.
That's actually a better, they don't have that in the book.
100% true. No, I think, I mean, my first thought is, as you guys are talking, there's been so much talk for so long in church, in just culture at large. I guess maybe church culture, maybe not culture at large, but about the woman's role and the S word, submission and helper.
I love what you said, S word.
No, I'm serious. Like it's become such a thing, but I think we've talked not a lot about what a husband's role is. And yeah. when you start to unpack everything that you guys just said and what the scripture says about a husband laying down his life for his wife and his family and being a servant leader and living with her in an understanding way, everything we're yeah. talking about, like what woman wouldn't want to submit to or help or whatever word, and mom and I are going to unpack that and hopefully actually give some better language about what those words actually mean and what the Bible's actually talking about. So
yeah.
if those words are triggering to you, stay tuned for next week. We'll try to unpack it some more. But I think God knew what he was doing when mm-hmm. he assigned this framework to marriages. It's not like a set of clear rules of this is exactly how it plays out. But I think when a woman is loved like that, some of those roles just naturally fall into place. Mm-hmm. But I actually think, you know, you're saying you're not very good at this. I totally disagree with you. I think you have really had to learn this, but I think you actually do this really well, where instead of trying to, in the chaos that is our family right now, instead of trying to be like, how can you protect yourself and preserve yourself and do the things you want to do? You do the opposite. You're like, how can I make it so that my wife is okay, so that our family can get through this portion of raising our kids? Like, I actually, nobody does this perfectly.
Yeah.
But I think you do this incredibly well and have learned.
Thank you.
I've changed a lot over the years. We got married at 21.
I know. So how dare you?
My preferences were at 21.
They were very different.
Versus I'm almost 37. And we're four kids in, like my preferences are very different than what they used to be. And sometimes I don't even know what they are, but you're yeah. quick to like study me. And if I say, maybe I want to try this, you'll go like, make it happen for me.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate you. About that about you. And I think not every husband is that way.
I'm not that way all the time, but you know, one of the things you are saying, and I'm not even trying to cut you off, but I'm going to pat myself on the back on one thing that has taken our whole marriage to figure out. And I finally did it right. And it was last night. We had some friends over, and I have a tendency, maybe some might say, to over communicate or talk a lot. And even maybe sometimes just like, it can lead me to places where you put your foot in your mouth and you're like, I really shouldn't have said that or whatever. And plus, if I've had dinner and it's past 9 o'clock at night, I just get real comfortable. So if you ever need to know anything really that's going on, just wait until like 10 o'clock. My filter goes completely off. It's not good. Anyway, you did the thing that I don't even know what it triggers in me, but I'm saying something and you quickly noted, like, you know, I'm filling in what you probably were doing, which was, man, I know that he doesn't want to say that. I know he doesn't even mean it. And it's coming across pretty lame. I'm just going to put my hand on his leg and let him know to just stop talking about this. And so she puts her hand on my leg and I felt it. And I was like, oh, I know what this means, but I'm just on a roll and I'm almost to the best part. And I was like, I need to steer this ship quickly away. And it was the first time in 15 years of marriage I was able to do that without getting like deeply frustrated. And anyway, it's just a silly story.
You did a great job. But I think that is an example of, like, I think you talked about Ezer in your teaching.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and mom and I will talk about it more, but what it means to actually be a helper, which is actually the Greek or Hebrew word, Ezer.
It's a Hebrew word.
To literally be like back to back in battle, helping yeah. protect each other.
Yeah.
And I think when we can recognize on both sides, like both of us have to do that, recognize that that's our job, to will the good of the other and to help each other. Because that was my thought of, like, I know he doesn't actually want to say these things. And so let me just help him with a little reminder in this moment, respectfully.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that's what we can do for each other. And when we're doing that, gosh, we just avoid so much hurt and conflict. And not that the goal is to avoid, but you know what I mean? Like, we end up just operating how God made us to operate in our marriages.
Yeah.
I know you want to go through a bunch of stuff here, but you start off with that verse from First Peter. I think it's important. There's a couple of phrases in there we haven't talked about. One is grant her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life. So husband and wife are equal.
Yes.
Yep.
It's and sometimes a lot of the marital discussions, focus on equality, and we're talking about roles within marriage. It has nothing to do with equality. It has to do with the roles that God has set up for the husband to play and the wife to play, which is clear in Ephesians 5, where, you know, my friend Emerson Eggerichs, I love his book, Love and Respect, where he talks about the different roles of husbands and of wives, but he says for a man to see Christ over the shoulder of your spouse. So as I lay down my life for Diane, I'm actually serving Jesus Christ who died for her. And so I'm called to, in Ephesians 5, and the wife is, so the husband is the Christ figure. He's to lay down his life for his wife.
Yes.
He's the servant. If you look at Ephesians 5, the one that has, in my opinion, the tougher job is the husband. He is to die. I mean, and the wife, though, she's the church figure.
Yeah.
So it says, as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wife ought to be to their husbands and everything, just to their husbands, not to all men.
Yeah.
Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. Well, gave himself up. He died. He literally gave his life.
Yep.
And we are commanded. That's a command.
Yes.
To serve our wives. And that's what you're saying.
Yep.
If a man really does that, from the heart, not like, well, the Bible says I have to do this. You know, I don't really like it very much, but I'm going to do it because I love God, but I don't, you know, well, that's not going to cut it.
No.
But if he does it with pure motives and serves his wife, then the presence of God is there in that marriage.
Yes.
And as we do that, we're doing it as unto Christ.
Well, I was going to say that Jesus redefined all authority in Scripture as servant authority.
And
the best part is Jesus gives us this example of, like, he doesn't take power. He doesn't become an authoritative figure over his spouse. So men, if you're listening, or sisters, if you're listening, you know, it's not a domineering power move over his wife. It's actually authority through servant.
Yeah.
He redefined authority as servant authority. And it reminds me of the story in John 13 where Jesus is washing the disciples' feet. And were you going to read that, or I'm happy to read it? It's right here.
No, you're going to read it.
It's just that one. It's just that
it's
little
beautiful.
Story.
You it's call beautiful. Me, that's just before he went to the cross.
Right before.
Right before.
And just to reference here, it just says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's what I am." This is Jesus to his disciples. "Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you should also wash one another's feet. I've set this example that you should do as I have done for you. And I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master." And as men, and men, if you're listening, that is one of our primary roles, is servanthood. A story comes to mind on the Sunday that I was actually, I don't know if I told you this, Phil. I might've told you, sweetheart, but I'm not sure. On the Sunday that I was teaching this text at this church, it was actually a baptism Sunday for this church. And this older gentleman, and when I say older, I think he was 87. Was in the crowd and basically had discerned, hey, I would love to get baptized again. And one of the pastors, Smartly Russo, you know who I'm talking about, rightly sat with him, kind of heard his story, and he said, you know, I don't know, you've been baptized. You've made that clarity. I wonder if something like a foot washing might be more appropriate. And so like kind of unplanned, they got this bucket of water, and he just came on stage because that was where the baptisms were happening. And this 86-year-old man, in front of all of his family and generations of family that were there, watched their grandfather and their father just repent of not living a fully Jesus-following life.
But he'd already been baptized.
He'd been baptized, but he walked away. But just like a recommission. Yeah. And so then I'm watching my friend Russo wash the feet, I think Russo's 32, wash the feet of this 86-year-old man and serve him in this way. But then at the same time, just watch this, like, it was a beautiful picture of literally what we're talking about. He had no idea I was even sharing this in the teaching. Mm-hmm. This was all like the Spirit moving and doing stuff. Anyway, it was just the neatest story for me to see, like, what Russo was doing in that moment, but also the recommitment space and that this man was doing. Both were just beautiful pictures of Jesus.
Yeah.
And that it's never too late, and that you can serve in this beautiful way. Yeah. There's just so many applications.
You know, is we're getting into some theology here, which is not the point, but it's really important. Like, this guy, if he was truly saved and truly baptized, baptism is a one-time thing.
Yep.
And communion is supposed to be where we confess regularly and realize again, we've been forgiven, and then say, Lord, you know, thank you for forgiving that. I'm getting it out of my life. But that very thing happened in John 13, because when Jesus came to Peter,
yes.
Peter said, "You're not going to wash my feet, Lord." And Jesus said to him, "What I do now, you don't understand." Peter said to him, "Never shall you wash my feet." Jesus said, "If I do not wash you, you have no part with me." Then Peter says, "Lord, not my feet only, but all of me." But Jesus didn't say, "No, you need all." He said, "He who has bathed needs only to wash his feet, but is completely clean, and you are clean, but not all of you."
Yeah.
And this he said because it was Judas. He knew Judas was about to betray him. But so I think that's what Russo had the wisdom to know, this guy realized he needed to repent and he needed to be forgiven and he needed to ask God's forgiveness again, but he didn't need to go back and be baptized.
Yes.
And so this whole example, though, is an example of servanthood. Mm-hmm. And then this is how we're to serve our wives.
And that's the thing. So I think it's living with them in an understanding, considerate way, honoring of their preferences, right? Yeah. And then it's servant leadership. And these aren't our points, but
yeah, but I have one more verse about authority.
Please.
So, because, you know, no husband should say, "Well, hey, I'm the head, so obey me."
Yeah.
This is the Apostle Paul in 2 Corinthians 13, verse 10. "The authority which the Lord gave me for building up and not tearing down." All spiritual authority is to build people up, which means to serve them.
Yes.
What do they need? What is best for them? How can I, you know, husbands are to wash their wives in the water of the word to present them holy and blameless before God. In other words, present your wife as everything the Lord wanted her to be.
Yes.
That you're helping facilitate that.
Yes. Mm. And what I love about what you're saying is that's a perfect, it's a perfect picture for us. And we need pictures. We need stories. Yeah. We need illustrations. We need pictures. And so what I'd love to do with the remainder of our time is, you know, I explained this, that we're going to kind of go through this more, but there were six things that even in that teaching that I had given to just the men to say, hey, these are things for self-examine. And honestly, they are questions to ask ourselves, but also in part ways in which we need to be operating as men and husbands in our specific role as men within marriage. And so there's six of these things. You can write them down if you want. I will put them in the show notes, but I would encourage you to just, you know, follow along with us. And so the first thing that is really important for a husband in his role is the first question, but also observation, and it's important, is, are you serving your family?
Yeah.
If Jesus is the example of servant authority, are you serving your family? And this is a really interesting dynamic, because a lot of times in the world, power, or the more power you have, the more you expect to be served. Mm-hmm. So that wonderful, also not so great example that came, I think it started really in the 40s, 50s, Industrial Revolution time, and a little bit before that, is where the husband would work. And then there was almost this dynamic where the wife was supposed to serve. There was like a servant slash, obviously these are big overarching ideas, but the idea that there was like a servant mind, like, I have the job, I have the power, I come home, you serve me. But really, that's not the way of Jesus. Jesus says, no, like, how are you serving your family? So my question for you, husbands, is really, are you serving your family? And that might look different. You know, it doesn't always mean with a lot more time. Sometimes we don't have time. But one thing that I've been convicted by, and Elizabeth, you can tell me if this is accurate, and please add any thoughts to this, but sometimes serving your family in the arena of your attention. Mm-hmm. And I was having a conversation with a dad the other day, and he's like, "When I get home, I'm working so hard on my job, and I use up a lot of my mental and emotional energy on what I'm doing. And then I come home and I realize, like, I really do want to be present mentally, but I am just not present mentally. And I can't really turn my brain off." And so we were just even talking about the strategy of, like, yeah, it's almost like in certain ways, one of the ways that you can serve your family, men, is by even being strategic with your schedule throughout the day to be even in tune with how much you're putting out into the world. Obviously, we work hard. Obviously, we're not talking about cutting corners or doing less, but are there certain meetings that you could take, but you don't need to take, or certain things that throughout the day you actually can reserve a little bit so that when you come home, you actually are able to serve your family a little bit? So I think attention is not always time. Sometimes it is, but sometimes a lot of it is, can you be present, or are you present? So any thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean,
Elizabeth's looking at you like,
I think you need to talk to your wife and find out what she needs, you know, because every marriage is different. You know, Diane is a raging introvert, and we got into this pattern where actually she enjoyed cleaning up the kitchen after, even though she usually made dinner, and I was working gazillion hours. I loved every minute of it, serving as a worship pastor, but I would come home. But for me, it was fun to lay down on the carpet and read the picture Bible to my kids, get them in their baths and their pajamas and get them in their beds. And she just got a break from the kids.
Yeah.
And because she likes a beautifully, perfectly clean sink, which I could never get it clean enough, she's actually being energized by being that. By herself in the kitchen. What another wife might say, I hate cleaning up the dishes.
Yeah.
I want to read the Bible to the kids. You go clean up dinner. So I just think it's finding a thing you do agree together of what works best for you. But the point being that you come home to serve, not to receive. And so, you know, I think were you telling me about somebody who stops like before they get home? You told somebody to stop a couple blocks away and just sit there for a few minutes. Was that you or did I hear that from someone else?
Yeah, I've mentioned that before.
Yeah, just to get yourself in the right mind. And I heard the story years ago of Howard Hendricks, amazing Dallas Seminary prof. And he used to tell guys, for him personally, he would, when he had little kids, he'd be driving home from Dallas Seminary to his house and he crossed a bridge every time. And he would mentally throw his briefcase, which nobody uses briefcases
iPhone.
Anymore.
He would mentally throw his iPhone.
Mentally throw your iPhone in the river and make a mental break. I'm coming home to bless my family. And then on the next morning, on the way back to seminary, he'd pick up his briefcase iPhone.
Yes.
So anyway, I think that point is that, you know, and I just read in the Old Testament, David went home to bless his household. Yeah. So you come really home to bless them. Not to just receive. And then in giving, you receive.
Yes.
Too. You know?
Yes. What's that like for you to experience? Because I can't do this all the time, but the times that I can come and do that, what's that experience for you as a wife in your role?
It's hugely relieving. Like, I think with the reality that the way women's loads have changed over the years of not living in a multi-generational community like people used to and not living in a village. We say all the time, it takes a village, but we have no village. And the demands that are on most women, you know, most women I know are working in some capacity inside the home. Like they have their own families and running of their home, and they are also having to provide income. So they are working in some way while they're doing all the things at home. They don't get to leave and go do that without children. And so I think the demands on women right now are so large and we have so little actual support. So when our husbands come in and say, I see you, I see the load you've had today.
Yeah.
How can I come in and support you until bedtime? Basically, you know, it is just so relieving. And I feel like I like let down in a good way rather than having to just, you know, all day I have to be like independent and strong and I have to manage everything. To have a minute where I don't have to manage everything and I have a partner to do that with me is so relieving. And not just to relieve me, it's so important for our kids.
Yeah,
like our kids need your presence in their life and not just you physically being around, but they need what you have to offer. And they respond to you differently than they do to me. And
especially in discipline.
Especially in discipline.
Which is so frustrating.
So frustrating sometimes. Even literally last night, the girls were like saying goodbye to the people we had over for dinner. And they were like trying to run to their car, which I know what they like to do is climb into other people's cars. And then to try to get them out is like a whole feat. And they're like halfway down the driveway. And you tell them, no, girls, nope, we're not going to the car. You need to come right back. And they stop and come right back. And I just looked at that and thought, that would not be what happened if I was the one who said that. I would be in the car trying to pull them out.
It's an unfair advantage.
I
think it's just like the distance creates enough mystery. I mean, I remember Duke will say things. It's so funny. Like he'll be like, when he gets in trouble, he's like, mom, don't tell dad. He's gonna kill me. And I'm thinking, son, we have a close enough relationship. What have I communicated to you that death is going to be the outcome of you messing up? Like we talk about constantly, like it's okay to mess up. We're all going to mess up. It's fine that you mess up. It's how you handle it that matters. Like I can't even tell you how many conversations I've had with him, but his refrain is he's going to kill me. And obviously he doesn't mean it, but it's at the same time, like what
what impression have I given you to think that mm-hmm. that's the ultimate thing? Like, you know what? It's been so bad. I'd rather just not have you. You know, like, it's so funny how we all do that so with extremes. Funny. But anyway, I think that's an important, thank you for your perspective on that. That's actually very helpful to hear. And I think even helpful for other husbands who are listening to hear, like mm-hmm. understand, like your wife, obviously this is your perspective. It's our situation. So it's maybe narrow. It's not your exact situation, but I'm sure a lot of the things that you just shared overlapped with some of the, wives that are listening, or the husband's wives who are mm-hmm. listening. And so,
but I would add just one more thing to that, and then I know we need to move on. But I think, you know, so often we love and we serve in the way that we also like to yeah. receive love and service. But I think it's so important with our spouses, especially, and our families as a whole, but to really be asking ask your wife, how can I serve you? What is helpful to you in this yeah. season? And if she doesn't know, help her figure out what it might be. Make some suggestions. What if we try this? Because like we've mentioned, your wife's needs are going to change over the years, and what mm. is helpful is going to change over the years. Mm-hmm. And sometimes she might need practical help. Sometimes she might just really need connection and somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
And so I think not just assuming, well, she just wants me to help with the kids. Like, chances are that's likely what she's going to want help with, but there might be other things too. And so I think being humble enough to say, to ask questions. How can I serve you? I want to come home and serve you. How can I do that?
Yeah.
You know, I don't remember ever doing that.
Hmm.
Looking back.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I would, if, you know, when you get older, they say, well, if you could go back, what would you do? You know, and I would have done more of that. Like, you know, Diane naturally served, loved every minute of raising you kids, but I think I could have done a way better job. Just to the younger guys listening,
yeah, mm-hmm.
yes, yeah. listen to what Elizabeth said and don't do a better job of it than I did,
yeah,
because it would have made her life easier and mm-hmm. brought us even closer, faster, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's so interesting. Yeah. Well, on that note, let's go to the next one. Next question to ask yourself and really a goal we're attaining to is, are you teachable? Mm-hmm. I think this is a hard one for every man in one way or another. I think some are way further down the road. But pride is a sneaky thing. Mm-hmm. And I find it hard. Well, just to be completely honest, my dad grew up in a really hard situation, which we've never shared on this podcast, and one day we'll get to it. But he grew up in a really hard situation, and his example was just not healthy. It wasn't a good example.
The worst of the worst.
Yeah. And so my dad did so much better than his dad. But even so, there was still so much residual. Mm-hmm. So I was raised with certain examples, which are like still obviously in some ways hardwired in me. And it was also a generational time where being teachable was also viewed as weakness. Mm-hmm. And so you always had to be right. You always had to have a certain level of authority. Admitting wrong was not a thing. Apologizing mm-hmm. was also not a thing.
Wow.
And you can imagine what kind of ecosystem that creates, you know, in for my grandfather, but also then, you know, my dad did better, but still that seeps into you, right? Mm-hmm. Because how are you not affected by your environment? We all are, whether it's good or bad, and whether we like it or not, we're very affected by our environments. And so I have found, and so where this lands on me is, it is hard. It has been such a steep learning curve to be teachable. Mm-hmm. And Phil, I think you do a great job at this. Like if Diane actually says to you, hey, Phil, I think you really need to rethink this, you're quick to, and you actually give me a lot of help in this. You're quick to go, you know what? You're right, honey. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say that word. You're right. I'm thinking about this the wrong way. You're quick to be teachable around that stuff. And I think that's probably, maybe it's more natural. Maybe your dad did it, but it's also learned. I see that you've actually tried to do that. But I know for me, it doesn't come natural. So I'm thinking for a lot of the people listening where you're like, yeah, the example I had was like, teachability is weakness. And you don't even have a language of teachability built into your life because you never really were shown it. Mm-hmm. I think it's an incredibly important tool to learn, and to learn how to listen to your wife. Because if not, you are missing out on a whole sphere, a whole realm of wisdom and understanding in life that you have access to if you would just be teachable. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's a hard, and I'm saying this to somebody who's like, the hand on the leg example. I mean, to me, I'm patting myself on the back on such an elementary marital tool that's taken me this long. I'm not saying it like I'm really actually proud of myself. I'm actually kind of annoyed that it's taken that long to figure out. And at the very same time, to me, it actually, it's a deeper thing. It's like, that's a teachable moment to recognize she has something I don't. And that's not weakness, but for the longest time, that didn't feel normal because what I was used to or what I was exampled was so, just so different than what I am trying to live in now.
Yeah.
So it feels really awkward. I think is a, maybe a, another way to say is that teachability can feel really awkward at first, but it is incredibly important. Yeah,
teachability is connected to humility.
Yes.
I mean, the opposite is when you're not teachable, you're prideful and arrogant. Like, hey, yes. I don't need to learn anything. Like, you need to listen to what I'm saying. Well, that's pride. That's arrogance. Yes. You know, pride, I heard one time, pride reacts when we're corrected for our mistakes. And yes. We all do. Like, we want to get defensive. And I still do this. You know, you want to defend yourself because you didn't mean it that way or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think true humility, true teachability. And, you know, I've noticed with, you know, what we used to call just, you know, disciple making, where you're like, you're leading 10 guys in a, you know, study for 10 weeks on becoming there's certain guys are more teachable than others.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You watch what happens in their lives. And the ones that are the most teachable are the ones that go the farthest.
Yes.
Because they're right. Like a sponge. Like, God said that. I want to do it. Like, oh, I never thought of that. Oh, great. I'm going to try that. You know, the guy's like, I don't know. I'll think about it. You know, the ones that are truly teachable go far. And I think teachability is listening to your wife.
Yes.
And hopefully, you know, hopefully she's correcting you in love, not in, you know, arrogance. Yeah. I mean, it's hard for a man to receive if the wife is like being rude and shaming him. And, you know, you call yourself a spiritual leader.
Yeah.
Which Diane has never done that to me. She's honored me. And it's easier to receive correction from a wife who is, you know, walking with God. And
Elizabeth, could you give an example of like, for some of the wives listening who are like, oh, I grew up with my mom berating my dad and didn't have that language. Give us just an example, like, and you have many, so it won't be hard for you to pick. In our marriage, just pick one of the 100. But like when I'm doing something that I don't want to be doing, or an attitude or an action, if whether that's a disposition towards you or towards the kids, or I'm being too intense or whatever, maybe just give like a word picture of what you would say to me. And the reason I'm saying that is because sometimes it's not that you don't want to do this, sisters, or even husbands. It's that you don't even know what the language is. So I just wonder if it might be helpful for you to give an example, because I know you do this really well with me. And although it still stings, you do it in a way that feels like that you're talking about. And I think you probably learned that from your mom. That was the you know, ecosystem you grew up in as a family. But give an example of what that looks like.
Yeah, well, I'm sure Mom and I will talk more about this in the episode we do for wives. But I mean, I think like to further the example of like the my hand on your knee to get you to stop talking. Like, I think we've had lots of conversations, not in front of people, but after the fact. Or I think a way to that I could say that to you rather than just putting my hand on your knee. But if I was talking to you about it, I could say, hey, like I know that you don't want to be somebody who talks poorly about other people or speaks negatively. I know that's not who you want to be. I also know that's like a little bit what you were exampled, and sometimes it's just hard not to. But hey, I think you said a little bit too much there, and maybe just be aware next time. Mm-hmm. Like maybe we don't need to share that. And I know that's not who you want to be. Like acknowledging your goodwill, that's not who you are. But that's just something I've married to you long enough. We all have our tendencies. I absolutely have mine. You do the same with me. Like, I know you don't want to be a critical person, but maybe you need to build up our kids a little bit and build me up a little bit and not just point out my room for improvement. But I think when we can start conversations with, hey, I love you. I'm for you.
Yeah.
This is who I see that you really are.
Yeah.
You just had this moment and I want to be able to help you. I'm not mad at you.
Yeah.
I think there's, if you say anything in that way, like, hey, this is who I see you really are. This is who I know you've said you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And we all fall short of who we want to be on a daily basis.
Yeah.
But I think if we can frame anything in that, it goes better. And where, you're right, though, I will say I am still very much learning is I can oftentimes say it right the first time. But if you don't respond well to how I've said it the quote unquote right way, then I will just lose it. Oh, like, but I said it right. I said it respectful. Maybe. You should listen to me the first time. That then I get disrespectful and not nice.
Did you also learn that from your mom? Because she's
maybe.
I'm not going to talk about that. But I am laughing. I'm laughing here because I've had the hand on the leg too. And I don't think your mom ever sat down with you and asked if your husband's being like arrogant or judging people or, you know, being so ungodly. Rude. Put your hand in his knee. She never taught you that, right?
No.
But you must see values. Are caught rather than talking.
So
you must
true. Have seen I the hand on the knee. Seeing it.
You must have seen it.
Oh, it's so funny.
I do. But that's where then I'll take on your response as like offensive rather than being like, he's having a fleshy response. That's not a me to take on or vice versa. Like,
I'm
we
like
do that
triggered
for each
as
other.
You're sharing this. So I like, I'm trying to like hang
that's
in
when
here, but I'm
your
like,
wife doesn't feel heard.
Yeah.
And she raises the volume. Just like your kids. Your kids know, oh, mom's a little upset, but she's not going to do anything about that. Oh, that tone of voice, now she's getting a little more upset. But that doesn't mean anything. Oh, that would mean something. So
it's like I think that's the analogy of when they're running out in the driveway. Uh-huh. I simply, they knew the
they
tone
know Dad's
was like,
voice.
I'm not joking. Like, please go out there. Test me on this. I dare you. You know, like they knew I was serious. But
they know the consequences are coming.
Well, and the listening piece is going to be a good one. And I want to keep us moving here. But I do think that's, thank you for sharing that example. I think that is helpful. And that's just one of many ways. But I think there's a lot of different language and ways that we can apply that. The third thing for the husbands here, does your schedule indicate that your family is a top priority in your time and your energy and your focus? This one's pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of depth we need to go in on this one. But looking at your schedule with your spouse, do you even have time? Have you built your family into your schedule? Does your family actually come before your work schedule? Is it actually that you love God and your wife and your kids and you prioritize those things as number one or number two, number three, you know, whatever the order is, and then everything comes after that? If not, why not? And look at that together. How do we schedule my life to be able, because a lot of this stuff, so again, sometimes it's not desires. It's that we don't know how to say no into a work situation. Sometimes we don't have good boundaries. Sometimes we don't know how to say no to a boss, or we have people pleasing, you know, issues. We all have a little bit of that, right? So all that to say, it's not judgment. Ask yourself, is that your situation? And if not, a lot of those practical things are just taking an hour or two and sitting down and going, okay, how can we just build our schedule to be more specific? Any notes on that before I go to the next one?
No, just, I mean, if you're not connecting with your spouse on a regular basis, start it. Even Diana and me, we don't even have any little kids at home. But like, if I don't sit down with her, we tend to try to do it on Sunday afternoons and look at the week.
Yeah.
We don't get it done the first thing Monday morning. And not just to say, okay, I'm going here, you're going there.
Yeah.
But I think with kids that, you know, that shows consideration. Mm-hmm. Like, and then you need to listen to each other. If you say, oh, that's your week, well, you know, where are we going to have a cup of coffee together at any point in there? Are we going to, you know, and life does get busy. And it's not that every week is perfect either. Mm-hmm. There's ebb and flow.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
You can't just say, you know, God is first, my wife is second. And, you know, sometimes, you know, being in ministry, especially sometimes you're gone for a week, you know, but overall, if your wife senses she's not in that place of honor, like we started with 1 Peter 3, then we're not doing a good job as husbands.
So, I love it. That's a very helpful word. Thank
it's more
you.
Of a circle, I think, you know, but with constant communication.
That's a great, the word picture is
because back in the 80s when marriages were suddenly seemed to be falling apart and divorce, you know, all of a sudden it seemed like, whoa, Christians are getting divorced too. Just, it was like kind of a shock. And so all the sermon, I mean, I preached, I'm like, God is your first priority. Your wife is second. Your kids are third and everything comes after that. Yeah. And, you know, I preached it and I believed it, but then I looked at life doesn't really work like that. Mm. But over a period of time, it needs to flow that way.
Yeah.
Because we're commanded to die for our wives.
Yeah, to serve.
And to love our kids.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's all over the Bible too. So.
Well, absolutely. And if you don't have time practically. Yeah. So that's a practical one. The fourth one, are you taking the initiative to lead your wife spiritually by sharing the things God is teaching to you?
Yeah.
And I think that it's easy to forget this, but man, that is actually a part of our role. And I did mention this, but just as a reminder, you know, initiating is a lot of the times what spiritual leadership looks like. It doesn't look like having all the answer. Like, have I taken you through that 3-point sermon yet today, honey? Like, promise you won't want to hear it. But if you can take the initiative to say, wow, look at what I'm learning here. And I would just even maybe paint it a different picture. Is that sometimes is daily for people if that's their schedule? Sometimes it looks like weekly. You sit down like, here's what God's been showing me this week. What about you? And I know this happens more organically for us, mm-hmm. whether that's you sending me, hey, this is really speaking to me today, or here's kind of also what's happening, or, you know, even like last night before we're in bed, hey, there's a couple of things I just want you to not talk about now, but like want you to think about, and we'll talk about it another time. So I don't always think it looks like, it doesn't always mean a ton of extra time or work, but are you taking the initiative to lead by sharing those things, by actually starting a conversation so that she can respond in turn and say, here's what God's teaching me too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, even when it comes to worshiping on Sunday, getting to church.
Yeah.
Like that's leadership, yeah, you know, like thing. So many people now post pandemic are just not going. They're just thinking, yes. Well, I'm just watching online and you can receive some teaching online, but you can't give. You can't,
yeah.
You know, part of serving God is giving. It's giving because he's given yes. you gifts, and those gifts are to give to others. And, you know, the Bible talks about coming together as a family. Don't forsake the assembling. And so I think that yes. a husband has a role there too, you know, where yes. I think a wife, she's exhausted, whatever, you were up late the night before. Diane talks about this in our parenting conference. But if the husband says, yeah. you know what, we go to church, let's make it fun. Let's do this right afterwards and let's go, whatever. But yeah. for the husband to step up and say, hey, mm-hmm. our family's going to go worship because God, it's going to actually help us
yeah.
be a family with Jesus at the center. Yes. And you're modeling for your kids, you know, the yeah. passionate Jesus followers gathers with the family of God yep. in community, yep. you know. And so I think a lot of wives... Elizabeth, you can say, I think a wife loves it when her husband partners with her in that. Like yeah. she's not dragging him or,
oh,
you know, you guys yeah. go ahead and go, I'm going to go boating, whatever. You
oh,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's modeling and mm-hmm. showing initiative.
Oh, I, it is very hard for me to see when there's a chasm there. And I mean, I'll say this because I'm a guy, because I can see the tendencies in myself when you have these excuses of working so hard in other arenas that you can ignore the most important things in your life. And men, I'm speaking to you because I know, because this is my own tendency, but when you overwork yourself in other arenas, it's easy to give yourself excuses to step out in the most important ways, whether that's time and presentness with your family, being at church with the, you know, like your whole, mm-hmm. like I honestly feel so bad for the man that goes, I'm going to go do my thing. You take the kids to church, simply because I don't think you fully understand what that played out over years actually mm-hmm. does to your relationship mm-hmm. with your kids, with your wife. Mm-hmm. And I can understand the tendency, but it's that like, it's almost immaturity in lots of ways. And it's lack of awareness of how you're impacting your own family and lack of leadership. And so I think as men, we don't have to, this isn't me shaming. It's saying, you got to be aware of those tendencies. You have to be teachable. When your wife says to you, hey, like, maybe this is not a good idea for you, that you can take the, like, the honest, loving, you know, word there to be open to it. So the next one I'm terrible at, but I would love to, I would love to share it because it's here. Are you a good listener? And essentially the idea there is wives need to share their hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal, I, again, am not using myself as a prime example, but the goal is that our job as husbands is to be the safest place for her to do that, for her to share and to listen. I recently was listening to something by a Christian neuroscientist named Kurt Thompson, and he talked about something that it's basically the biblical principle of listening, but it's called attuned listening, and it's actually like the neuroscience of what happens when somebody sits with you and gives you proper eye contact, full attention, no phones, no watches, and looks at you and basically sincerely listens. And he basically just describes what happens to the brain, what happens just neurologically when you share your story, especially the pain points in your life, when you mm-hmm. actually are an attuned listener
yeah.
to the person that's sharing their pain, you mm-hmm. actually become a source of healing. And what his argument was is that when you actively listen to somebody share their story, especially if it's really painful, there's a lot of pain associated with that story, and that doesn't fully go away. But what does happen is your attentive listening ends up being something for them that they actually then can, it's a positive experience. So they shared their story, negative, painful, hard, but they actually now can link it to being a really positive, like, wow, I remember when I shared that part of my story, their face was full of compassion and kindness and empathy for me. And it actually starts the process of healing, even in trauma. Just listening well can heal people and heal wounds. And so it's not just like, oh, we're being good listeners. It's like really healing. And so interesting.
Well, you know, what I was thinking when you were just talking, where we started with the passion notes on, the first Peter verse. Being attentive to what she delights in and what are her preferences are. I mean, how are you going to know that if you're not studying her and listening to her? You're not going to know what she delights and what her preferences are. And I need to get way better at this. You know, we've just been through this crazy 2.5 months of this really fast move, and we've been flying and flying and flying. And then I tend to be one of those guys that's glued to my iPhone. And I tell you, there's many times, even after 43 years of marriage, where my wife knows she does not have my attention. And it's hurtful. Because she feels like something else is more important to you right now than listening. But you're right. Look your wife in the eye and give her your undivided attention. It speaks love.
It does. And the thing that was helpful for me was like, this can be healing. You don't even have to say anything. And the hardest part, oh my gosh, the hardest part, gentlemen, I know you're going to completely agree with me. The hardest part is she will share so many good things, but problems. She wants to share all these problems. And so then I immediately go, oh, I know what she needs. She needs me to fix this stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, how do we fix that? Don't worry about this. This is fine. Like, so I'm like completely business minded in a response to somebody who just wants tenderness and empathy, doesn't want the answers, doesn't want me to solve it, wants me to listen, maybe eventually like talk down the road about solving it. But in that moment, it's just like, no, just talk to me about it. And then I go into problem solving mode. Like, she's a business partner. I'm like, you know what your dad and I would do? I'll tell you what we would do on this one. You know, like, and we start fixing everything. And really the whole goal was not to fix anything. It was to listen.
Right.
And obviously, like, again, I'm sharing this out of a place of not doing this well. And I'm slowly learning. But I think it those observations for me have been very helpful to go, I can do more healing by just shutting my mouth than by opening it and trying to fix a problem that is oftentimes things I can't even fix anyway. They're so complex. Mm-hmm. It's not like I'm going to fix the worry that you're sharing with me about the interaction that you have with one of our kids and like, you know, all the different layers of that. It's not like I'm going to be able to always just go, oh, I can give you one word or a sentence that's going to just take it all away. Mm-hmm. So I think listening to our spouse is huge. Would you agree, honey?
Well, I'm just, as you're saying that, I think it's like basic human desire, whether male or female, is to be seen and known. And when you feel genuinely listened to without someone trying to fix it, and sometimes I do need, I'm like, okay, here's a problem. I need you to help me with the solution. But
you usually set me up for it. Yeah, you let me know.
But I think half the time when we want to be listened to, it's just that we want to be seen.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a beautiful gift you can give your wife, and it doesn't feel like you're doing anything or conquering anything.
Yeah.
And yet it's more impactful than you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last thing, and we'll leave you all today, is that we'll leave you with is the sixth thing to ask yourself. Are you accepting equal responsibility for the children? I think that's an important thing because it's easy for all of us. Equal responsibility doesn't always mean equal time. But your role as a father, as you said earlier, Elizabeth, is really important. Mm-hmm. And again, it doesn't always mean time, but I do think it means responsibility. And are you sharing that load of responsibility, caring? Like in the example of education, there's certain things that you will take lead on with our kids because that falls more in line with your gift set or your responsibilities or the things that we've determined together that are yours to take and mine to take. But if you're just assuming she's going to figure it all out. She's got it. I'm going to do my work thing. And we fall into this trap too. Like it's very easy for us to get into that trap because it's easy for me to be like, I'll focus on making sure we're provided for. You can focus on making sure that everything's at home fine. And of course there's like every relationship's different. So I don't want to like put anybody in any sort of like lane or whatever. But the point being that it even falls for us. I have to remind myself like, no, you need me to either take this on or listen to this or the times that you have given me like responsibility, like you're going to do science with the kids. I did it twice and I was like, this is never going to be a good thing for them, for me, for our future. You know, so sometimes it's trial and error. But all that said, are you taking equal responsibility? Because even if your wife is better in some aspects of parenting, your children are your responsibility and your wife needs a partner who willingly shares that load with her. And it's really important that we do that as men. So as our gender roles in marriage, in as men, these are just some of the things, you know, mm-hmm. It's servant leadership. It's being considerate and compassionate and learning who our wife is. And I would encourage you, if you haven't had a chance to even write those six things down, go back, listen, write those things down and just process before the Lord. What are the things that I can grow in, right? We all mm-hmm. have room. Be teachable in this space, yeah. And go, what are the things I need to grow in? Any final words before we go?
Oh, just that my only final word would be, you know, to those listening, those men listening, or you wives sharing this with your men, you know, just to the guys, you know, you don't have to do all six perfectly. I'm going to work on all six of these right now.
Good
There's
word.
Probably one that jumps out at you.
Yeah.
And I love that about the Lord. You know, he's molding us. Romans chapter 8 says that he's molding us into the very image of his son, but he doesn't give us 26 things to work on right now and to fix by tomorrow.
Yes.
But he does lead us into the next thing and the next mm-hmm. thing. So if one of mm-hmm. those jumped out at you, work on that one and just say, hey, for the next 7 days, I'm going to work on listening. What might that be? And how could I best do that? You know?
Yes.
And then move on to the next one. That's my final thought.
Thank you. That is incredibly helpful. Thank you, Elizabeth, for sitting with us in this conversation. And I know for all of us, you know, we're all in process. So just remember that wherever you're at in this journey, right. We are in process. It is a journey. You won't arrive. But we want to get to that space more and more, where we move forward and move and grow in godliness. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If this podcast has blessed you in any way, here's a few ways that you can partner with us in this ministry. First is to give. Intentional Parents is a nonprofit and we rely on the generous giving of our partners. So please head over to our website, intentionalparents.org/give, if you would like to become one of our partners through giving. Second is to share it. If this has at all been helpful to you, we encourage you to share it with your friends, your family, and those that you know would be blessed by it. Third is to follow us on social media platforms, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us on Instagram @intentional_parents. And lastly, if you would head over to iTunes, if you enjoyed today's episode, and leave a review on iTunes, this helps us bring more hope, help, and healing for families.